This is Judaism Unbound, episode 37, Jewish Sensibilities. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dan Liebenson.
And I'm Lex Rofus.
And we're here today in the first of four episodes on the sensibilities that will guide the future of Judaism, specifically looking at Jewish sensibilities with our guests, Jonathan Wucher and Lee Moore from the Lippman Kamfer Foundation for Living Torah. The idea of Jewish sensibilities was coined by one of our early guests, Vanessa Oakes, in an article that she wrote some years ago in Shema magazine, which we'll link to in the show notes. The idea was taken further by the Lippman Kamfer Foundation for Living Torah under the leadership of our two guests. Jonathan Wucher until recently served as president of the foundation, and he now serves there as senior fellow. Prior to becoming president of the Lippman Kamfer Foundation for Living Torah, John was the president and later the chief ideas officer of JESNA, the Jewish Education Service of North America, which was the education arm of the Jewish Federation's movement nationally. Our second guest, Rabbi Lee Moore, is the director of Jewish and organizational learning at the Lippman Kamfer Foundation for Living Torah. And in addition to that, she serves as the rabbi at Kent State University, Hillel. Before we welcome our guests, I just want to say a little bit about the foundation, because the idea of Living Torah can sound like kind of a mouthful and perhaps alien to some of our listeners. And I think it's important to understand how the foundation defines the term. So on their website, they give the following quote to explain Living Torah. Quote, "We believe that Judaism is a dynamic, evolving force in ongoing dialogue with the world around it, and that it brings a powerful vocabulary of accumulating wisdom to this conversation. We call this wisdom Living Torah. We believe that Living Torah can inspire and guide Jews and fellow travelers from all backgrounds to live more meaningful lives and to act to repair and perfect the world." So we're very excited to welcome our guests, John Wucher and Lee Moore. Thanks so much for being here with us today on Judaism Unbound.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Great. Well, so where we've been so far in the podcast is really, I've been largely looking sort of conceptually at where we are today in the evolution, in the journey of Judaism. And we've talked a lot about maybe the process of coming about with new approaches towards living a Jewish life. And as we turn towards the substance, in a sense, the stuff that this next Judaism will be made of, it seemed that really the right place to turn at first was to you, because you've really been developing the idea further, which I know was initially introduced by Vanessa Oakes, who was one of our earliest guests, the idea of Jewish sensibilities as a way of sort of framing the stuff out of which Judaism is made or might be made. And I was hoping, Lee, that at least to start with, you could sort of expand on that, talk a little bit about how you got to Jewish sensibilities as a hook, and go into more depth about how you're thinking about this lens of Jewish sensibilities in this project that we're all engaged in.
Thanks, Dan. Sensibilities as a framework or a way of thinking about this question of what does it mean to be Jewish? What might it mean to really be part of any kind of culture? So in part, one reason why we are interested in this framework of sensibilities is that it enables us to answer this question of what does it really mean to be Jewish? And how does that Jewishness get expressed in a way that doesn't necessarily have to rely on religious ritualism to describe it? As much as rituals are a wonderful element of the tradition, and in many ways can reinforce that cultural sense of what it means to be Jewish, they are not the be-all and end-all of a person's Jewishness. Part of why sensibilities feel like a good framework for us is that it's not only just about how we perceive the world, although it's very much how we perceive the world. We each have our own cultural constructions and how we're going to perceive the world. It's also how we may act in the world. So we take in information through a lens, one might say, like through a Jewish lens, if we have such a lens. And then we also respond to the world from a place of being influenced by Jewish stories and Jewish histories to the degree that each of us is. I'll say that part of the historical piece, how did we come to this notion? Certainly Vanessa Oakes' article was influential, especially on Joe Kanfer, who works with it's on our board of our foundation. And Joe was really struck by this idea because he really saw saw this idea of sensibilities play out in his own life. And as he took a step back and becoming a grandfather and thinking of, okay, what does it mean to pass Jewishness on to my grandchildren and beyond? What were some ways of thinking about his own Jewishness that he could really really grab onto and made sense to him? And so that's really how we first started thinking about sensibilities as a construct.
So let me ask you, when we talk about Jewish sensibilities, could you go into a little more depth into what that really means, and perhaps talking about what that doesn't mean, you know, meaning like it's Jewish sensibilities as opposed to what other frame might we think of that we're not using when we're using a Jewish sensibilities frame? And perhaps some examples would be helpful too.
Sure. So oftentimes people ask us, well, what is the difference between sensibilities and values, for example? And in recent years, also the framework of midot, or characteristics, has also starting to be widespread, actually, which is wonderful, in a variety of different Jewish educational settings and programs and people's lives, as they ask themselves, you know, alone at night, what am I doing, and what kind of person do I want to be here? How we see that sensibilities are somewhat different than these. While all three are cultural constructs, sensibilities really sort of cut across the cognitive, affective, and behavioral lenses. And well, maybe it is best for me just to give an example. So one example that we talk about a lot is, let's say, a sensibility that we might call something like gerim hayitem, that you were strangers. And this is a trope that we see coming up in a variety of Jewish rituals and stories, and it's in the prayer book, this idea, we were strangers in the land of Egypt, and so therefore we have a certain kind of perspective that we have about strangers and strangeness, such that regardless of what kind of life experience I come into contact with, if I see a person that is estranged in a certain kind of circumstance, that because I may be walking around with this sensibility of gerim hayitem, that I would say, oh, I recognize that strangeness, and I know that I have a certain kind of perspective on it, and I want to act toward this person in a way that does not estrange them even further, or that does not add to their estrangement. You know, there could be an action around gerim hayitem that a school group might do to say, hey, let's take a look at who are the immigrants in our cult, in our community, for example, and understand who are these immigrants and learn a whole lesson plan around immigration and the immigrants that are in a community. So that's one sort of very explicit way that an educational unit could develop on that sensibility. And at the same time, it can also be as personal as classroom dynamics and, you know, the way that everybody should be in equally, you know, included in a classroom. And so there's, you know, if there are dynamics around estrangement that start to happen, having some kind of sensitivity toward that.
I think of sensibilities in terms of two dimensions. One is a very deliberate one, one that connects a particular lens or prism back into the Jewish experience, whether through text or history or story or personalities. So something like gerim hayitem, as an example of a Jewish sensibility, would evoke connections to the story of the Exodus, would call forth memories of times in Jewish history when we have been strangers, not just in Egypt, but in our wanderings, etc. But there's also an aspect of sensibilities, I think, when they're fully realized, if you will, that's almost like a heuristic, something that is so ingrained in how we see the world, how we perceive the world, that it becomes part of our fast thinking, if you will. You know that in recent years, there's been so much attention paid in psychology to the notion that we have sort of two different operating systems as human beings. We have a slow, deliberative, rational one where we think about values, we make deliberate decisions, etc. But we also have a sort of fast thinking mode. I guess Malcolm Gladwell talks about it as blink. And one of the things that happens, I believe, when sensibilities are really internalized is that they can become part of that fast thinking mode, a heuristic that helps us instinctively to respond to situations. And part of what Vanessa Oakes pointed out, which I think is so powerful, is that sometimes we may not even be aware of where that original heuristic comes from. Not everybody is going to know all of the textual reference that go together with Gerim Hayitem. But when the culture is operating properly, that mindset, that capacity to see the world through a particular lens gets passed on. The challenge becomes when the culture isn't working in that sort of automatic way, and then we have to try to teach people sensibilities and help them to acquire them, and eventually, hopefully, they do become part of their fast thinking as well as their deliberative process.
So just to flesh out this idea of Jewish sensibilities, I think it's very sensible, by the way.
to flesh this out.
I couldn't resist. But I'm gleaning a few things and try to systematize my understanding of this, and you can let me know if I'm understanding right. One piece appears to be that these sensibilities, so in this situation, you know, we were strangers in Egypt, are ideally uniquely Jewish or deeply grounded in particular Jewish stories, texts, etc. But it sounds like also it's not merely that, you know, X value is present in the Talmud or whatever, and therefore it's a Jewish sensibility. It's also that it sort of can be applied universally and in many ways independent of, you know, a particularly Jewish situation. I mean, we were strangers in Egypt doesn't only apply to the way we look at the Passover story, but how we relate to the world is what I'm getting. Is that a fair way of understanding this?
I like that. That's great. Yes, absolutely. And you know, part of this project, and we've come across this and had this conversation many times, and when people say, well, you know, let's say simcha, you know, the sensibility of simcha, or to, you know, approach life with some joy and a sense of, you know, not just joy, happy, happy, joy, but also a sense of contentment with what is, like a gamzu l'tova, like also that is for the good kind of storyline that definitely comes out of the Jewish tradition. And yet there may be other cultures that also emphasize that kind of attitude, which is just fine. You know, we're not putting forth this framework to say this is, you know, the Jewish people have cornered the market on Gerim Hayitem or Simcha or any of these. While at the same time, I actually really personally, I think one of the biggest issues we struggle with right now in this day and age is this dynamic between particularism and universalism, where exactly it fits, what, you know, a lot of the students that I teach on campus or a lot of folks that I know are somewhat offended by a particularistic approach to Judaism and have a really hard time accepting those boundaries, where at the same time, there is unique knowledge base that comes out of every culture, I feel, you know, and there's a lot to be learned from any kind of culture. And so how do we make the most of the teachings that we have from this tradition and see them not necessarily as continuing a cycle of being cut off, but rather ways to live a better life and, as we like to say, shape a better world. That's what sensibilities can very much be. So exactly as you're saying, it all depends on really how well integrated they are into us as people. And then, you know, ideally they then can inform a kind of way of being in the world that is applicable regardless of what the circumstances. And at the same time, do, as John was saying, do reflect back to larger stories of the, you know, for example, of the Exodus or stories, all kinds of stories. And we know that narrative is powerful, and to the degree that we can each feel part of a larger story is actually quite good for us as in our well-being. Helps us feel less disconnected, helps us feel like we are part of something larger, which we are, but in our time, it's really easy to forget that. So the degree to which I might be expressing simcha, like I come across a difficult day and I think, okay, this is also for the good. Or I think of Rabbi Nachman teaching that, you know, it's a mitzvah to be in simcha. It's not something that necessarily comes naturally. I need to work at this. And I think of those like micro stories or micro narratives that, you know, come into my experience, then that helps also to connect me with something that's larger than me. And then that's helpful for my own well-being.
Well, so I'm interested in you know, how you might sort of start to think about something that, you know, probably some of our listeners will think that I'm a broken record about, but I think it's an interesting example. And I think we're far enough away from the Democratic primary season that it's clear that there's nothing political in what I'm talking about here. I'm using it as a famous public example, which was Bernie Sanders and the way that the question was raised, what kind of a Jew is he? And when he himself was asked, what kind of a Jew are you, right, he says something along the lines of, my family was killed in the Holocaust, and therefore I learned that politics is a serious business, and, you know, I need to make sure that we use politics for good and not for harm of people. So one reaction that I have to that sort of in the sensibility genre is that that is a sensibility that comes not from a text, but from a historical experience, or rather recent historical experience, the Holocaust. And he is essentially deriving a new Jewish sensibility out of that. Now, that's not a new Jewish sensibility. In fact, it is a recurrent Jewish sensibility. So at a level deeper, we can say what Bernie Sanders really is surfacing is a deeply ingrained Jewish sensibility that when something bad happens to us, we make sure that nothing bad like that ever happens to anyone else. And you could take that to a third level, which maybe is the text itself, which talks about a very particular historical event that we experienced, the Exodus from Egypt or the slavery in Egypt, and that says, you were slaves in Egypt, and therefore you shall not oppress the stranger and the widow and the orphan, etc. Essentially, my question, though, is if Bernie Sanders says, look, you know, I wasn't familiar with that text, right? You know, I don't go to Passover Seders. I'm not grounding this sense that I have in any text, but I drank it in the water of my family, right? This was, my mother talked about this all the time, you know, and my grandmother, you know, before she was killed in the Holocaust, she used to talk this way about the Spanish Inquisition, you know, and that it's not, so in a sense, I'm asking, you know, and I've tried to kind of float the possibility, right, that someone like Bernie Sanders or people like him could in a way represent a dissident form of Judaism that is actually trying to say, we don't believe that the institutional forms of Judaism is truly living out something that is a deep and critical and central Jewish sensibility, and we want to sort of rebuild something that really does live that out. And I guess in a way, like, my question is, how would your foundation, how would this point of view kind of relate with someone like that? You know, would the idea be, hey, Bernie, you should study some texts because you'll see that this actually is a very ancient sensibility? Or is it to say something like, no, Bernie, you're actually living out the dream? You know, like, this is, how can we build a Jewish society around people like you? Or is it something in between?
For me, I think the position that I adopt is a kind of what I would call a Dayenu position, alluding to the Passover song. Even if only this had happened, it would have been enough. But if this also happened, that would have been enough as well. So for me, if there's somebody like a Bernie Sanders who says, hey, I don't know anything about this text stuff, I don't study, I don't go to synagogue, but I do know that the Holocaust tells me that I must fight for justice in the world, and I must make sure that it never happens again. Dayenu. Okay, that's good, because I and many others are able to look at that and are able to make that connection and say, yes, he is part of that chain of tradition, if you will, that includes what is hateful to you, do not do unto your neighbor, as the, you know, the perhaps golden rule, that includes all of those textual and historical references that maybe are not relevant to Bernie. What I think is remarkable today is that there is a tremendously vibrant Jewish social justice movement of people who often, I think, start with this visceral sense, this isn't right. As a Jew, I need to fight for justice. But what we're finding, you asked as a foundation, how do we look at this? Well, one of the ways we look at it as a foundation is, whoa, there are all sorts of opportunities today to actually work with these people to help them deepen the Jewish dimension, if you will, of their commitment to social justice. And guess what? Lots of them are looking for that. Not everyone, perhaps, but many of them are. So here too, we would start with the sensibility and say, okay, this is great. Your passion for justice, we agree, is something that is intrinsic to the Jewish experience and something that we want to honor and respect. And if you're interested in exploring the origins and the multiple dimensions of that passion, that's good too.
As I think about sensibilities, I realize I look at, if you were to come up to me, you know, before I had heard of Lippincamfer, of the term Jewish sensibilities, and asked me what I thought of the phrase Jewish sensibilities, I probably would have been resistant to it, because what comes to mind without, I mean, I'm totally on board with so much of what's been said so far, but what comes to mind when I hear Jewish sensibilities, or like a person with Jewish sensibilities, is sort of the classic stereotype of sort of like a Woody Allen neurotic person. Like, that's what I think of when I hear the phrase. And I can tell that's not what you mean, but I wanted to sort of name that, because I'm curious if anybody has sort of come to your work with that presumption, and if that's been a challenge. But the other question I have is a bit bigger picture, because I think there's two main things that we could do with these Jewish sensibilities, or two goals we could have. And they might not be either or, but I'm curious how you relate to them. One goal is, we want more Jews to be in touch with these Jewish sensibilities because they can help them both make their lives better, make the world better. That's one angle. So Jews sort of connecting with these time-honored sensibilities. The other is, we think these are awesome sensibilities. We want the world to have them. We want human beings to connect to the idea of, we were strangers in Egypt, even if they don't think of themselves as actually Jewish, such that they would be part of that, you know, ethnic group. And I'm curious, is that equally a goal, to sort of get these principles out there, whether folks are Jewish or not? Or is more of the framing designed such that people who are Jewish can connect with these sensibilities that maybe sort of exists within us in a metaphorical kind of sense?
I would say that one way of thinking about the question is, you know, and it's true, like, if you have a goal, then it makes a difference in terms of where you put your energy and your time and your resources to try to impact a certain outcome. One of the things I really actually like about sensibilities is that they offer a conversation topic for people to even ask that question, what does it mean to be Jewish? And to start digging into those deeper layers. And that conversation can happen not only amongst Jews, but if there are other people who, for example, are married to Jews and raising children with Jews, or have a parent that's Jewish, or a child that's Jewish, or and a cousin that's Jewish, you know, that this is a way for us to have a conversation like that, that is not so obtuse or so ritually specific that it makes it difficult to have the conversation. So I would say, I mean, from our foundation's perspective, we're not necessarily, it's more the goal of connecting, connecting Jewish people to these things. But certainly we're not at all just so narrow in our focus that we're not interested in others.
I think that the reality of our lives today is that all of us have opportunities to be exposed to wisdom from multiple cultures. And that's a good thing. And I don't think that we are on a missionizing quest to try to convince the world that Jewish sensibilities are the best and that everybody ought to adopt those. At the same time, I think we have a contribution to make to the larger conversation that's taking place in the world today, in American culture, elsewhere, around what are the kinds of values, what are the kinds of understandings, what are the kinds of commitments that people want to bring to their lives. And so we are, I think, happy that the language of Jewish sensibilities seems to be one that can cross cultures to some extent, and at the same time remain deeply rooted in, in Jewish culture. So from our perspective, I think it's really a question of how do we develop this language? How do we get a rich conversation going within the Jewish populace, if you will? And how does that conversation then spill over into the, into the broader world?
Recently, I've been reading the book by Yuval Noah Harari that will come out in English in a few months called Homo Deus. I've been reading it in Hebrew. And the idea, he's an Israeli philosopher, historian, and the idea that he's exploring, in Hebrew, the book is actually called The History of the Future. And he's trying to figure out this idea of, well, where's the future really going? And he talks about, the various things that are being studied in serious ways in scientific labs today of the vast prolongation of life and human happiness and also artificial life forms, right? The technology accelerating into non-organic life forms. And, as I'm listening to this talk and thinking about the future, it puts me in the mind of two things. One is, when we think about human, and I'm curious how you think about either or both of these, one is when we talk about Jewish sensibilities, I think we often think about the Jewish sensibilities that the Jews were thought to have. And I'm thinking about some of the sensibilities that we imagine God to have in our stories and wonder if there, as we become so powerful that at the very least, we Jews are in the position of having the kind of the power of the folks that we used to be afraid of, like the pharaohs or the rulers of other countries, or even just the citizens of Assyria or Babylon or whatever, and we weren't this small kingdom anymore, that some of the ways in which we imagine God to be, I think, a beneficent type of ruler, that how might we think about how those sensibilities might apply to us? And, Harari makes this claim in a very strong way that not that humans are becoming gods, but that humans are beginning to get the kind of power in the world that we used to imagine to be the powers of God. And I think about, our flirtation with authoritarianism in America and other ways in which, we as Jews may be well served by understanding that we have a deep-seated sensibility that if and when we ever should find ourselves in a position of power, that we need to cultivate the permission of dissent among those who don't agree with what we're doing. And we perhaps might think about that within the Jewish community as well. And at least I think about it from a sort of prophetic voice of thinking about what I would want to see our institutions saying about the Jews who we try to talk to in our podcast that are not finding those institutions to their liking, that should be an orientation to listen to them and to embrace their dissent. I just want to sort of ask one other question. It's only tangentially related to Harari, because he's also talking about this time when perhaps the capacity of the human mind will expand and we'll be able to hold a lot more than we currently can. But until that time comes, I think about the overwhelmedness of having access to so many different sensibilities and so many wisdom traditions that we have now, right? I mean, so many American and Jews have the American sensibilities and the Buddhist sensibilities and the Jewish sensibilities. And if they're married to somebody who's not Jewish, their culture sensibilities. And like, John, you were saying earlier, of course, there's so much great stuff in all of them. And at a certain point, the human mind fills up. I worry about sort of a supersaturated sort of condition where it just becomes overwhelming and we don't know what to do and we don't find any anchor and it all sort of like falls apart. So as we get into this, I just want to note for our listeners that you at the Lippman Kamfer Foundation for Living Torah has identified 10 Jewish sensibilities that you're focusing on. And you've created these cards that capture the title that you've given to this sensibility and a little bit of description. We don't have time to go deep into each one right now, but I will note that we will link to these on our show notes at JudaismUnbound.com. We'll link to your page on the Lippman Kamfer Foundation for Living Torah site where you have images of these cards. These are a little bit different from the 10 sensibilities that Vanessa Oakes identified in her article in Shema. We'll link to that as well in our show notes. But I just want to read through these very quickly just so that our listeners can get some sense of what you're talking about when you talk about Jewish sensibilities. So the first one that you identify is joy or simcha. You describe it as find pleasure in life. The second is these and those, elu va'elu. Wielding a both-and perspective, the idea that you can potentially hold two contradictory ideas in mind at the same time. The third is all people are made in the divine image, B'Tselem Elohim, valuing the humanity in each person. The fourth is what you call Israel, wrestling with God, question everything, including authority. The fifth is we will do and we will hear, or we will do and we will understand, Na'aseh v'nishma, try it, learn by doing, try it first before you even know a reason for doing something. The sixth is brokenness, or Shvira, you say embrace imperfection. The seventh is Shabbat, a day of rest, making time for rest and renewal. The next one is take yourself and go, Lech Lecha. This was the order that God gave to Abraham at the beginning of Genesis. Take the next step, go out, just go out on a journey. The ninth is return, or teshuvah, taking responsibility for your actions. And finally, the sensibility that you have identified as a key sensibility for us today in Judaism is the idea of partnership, or brit, and you lay it out as nurture community. So those are the 10 sensibilities that at least you have identified as the 10 that you are focusing on as a foundation. And whether those are the only 10 sensibilities, that whether our listeners might choose other sensibilities, this is just an example of the way that you think about what specific ideas are we talking about when we talk about Jewish sensibilities. And we encourage our listeners to go to our show notes for this episode, www.judaismunbound.com, and you can explore this in greater depth, explore Vanessa Oakes' idea, and think for yourself about what sensibilities you would identify as key Jewish sensibilities if you were going to be thinking about it in those terms. And I think about major times of transition in Jewish history that have often featured a kind of reduction, and that's why I'm thinking about your 10 sensibility cards. And I don't know if this was intentional on your part, but I'm wondering if, you know, one of the moves that we might encourage is some boiling down, you know, some notion of is it 10? Is it 100? But perhaps there's a lot of Jewish sensibilities that may be very wonderful, but maybe we should put them more, I think of sometimes the Messiah as this mythic character that says, look, this really great, amazing stuff that we just can't do right now, we mythologically say that goes into the time of the Messiah and the Messiah will bring them back. And we continue to study, you know, the whole idea of study for its own sake. We still study these things even though we don't do them, but somehow to move forward, we do have to somehow reduce what we actually do. And I'm wondering if this sensibilities lens helps us kind of sort through some of that as well.
I'll say that in terms of this particular project of putting together this deck of cards, that was absolutely in our minds. And in fact, we originally wanted it to be 7. And this was very much in the influence of Joe Kanfer, who agrees that, you know, if you want people to remember things and you want people to, you know, wrap their minds around them, it's important to have just a few at a time. And so I think, you know, what you're saying, Dan, about the overwhelmingness of sensibilities and also just religion in general and Judaism in general, there's so many different, it is a wonderful thing of how many different pathways there are to get into the tradition and how many different ways to express it. And at the same time, for a lot of American Jews, they are asking for something that's a little bit more BuzzFeed, you know, kind of, not necessarily in terms of the you know, depth of the explanation, but certainly, like, what can I digest right now? You know, what can I hold in my hands, literally? What can I open up? What can I take a minute to think about? And then that could take me further. So I absolutely agree that I think that in the time that we're moving into, ability to pay attention and direct attention and nurture and foster our own attention is really one of the biggest challenges.
I had a question that I think is sort of a practical question. We've done some great digging into the theory of this, but I'm curious. So we've got these sensibilities. We have 10 of them. What's your vision or visions, plural, for sort of what a Jewish world would look like if these were sort of centralized, or even on a micro level, what particular institutions would look like if these were at the center? Is it that sort of there's a group context of study around these particular questions? Is it that these sort of become a mantra of sorts? People meditate? Like, what are some ideas for practically how we sort of take these sensibilities, and while they may already sort of be there in us, as you started off the conversation with, how we sort of actualize them moving forward? Because I think they're wonderful, and it'd be cool to think about what it could look like.
One of the things that we've suggested is that we might rethink the way in which we organize Jewish education to make these sensibilities a central element in how we define success in Jewish education. If instead of seeing Jewish education as being simply about the acquisition of certain knowledge and certain skills, we said, look, what Jewish education really is an opportunity for people to encounter various sensibilities, to think about how those sensibilities can affect their own lives. Do they have a place in their lives? And then for each individual or each community, because I think there is an important communal dimension to this, then all of a sudden we're at a point where people are, in fact, into that conversation about Jewish sensibilities. And that's what I think we're looking for.
I'll add that thinking about how they might interface institutionally or with institutions, I'm struck by, you know, thinking about the JCCs of the world. And, you know, there are several JCCs who are asking, okay, what's Jewish about the Jewish Community Center? For example, the San Francisco JCC, I know if you walk in, there's a huge sculpture that has these, seven Jewish values that they literally display in the foyer. And that, again, getting back to this question of, what does it mean to be Jewish? You know, and how is it? There are so many different Jewish institutions that are running according to, you know, a school, maybe a Jewish school. What is it that really makes that school Jewish? You know, what is it that makes the JCC Jewish? Having vocabulary around that, and a vocabulary that can be, have depth to it, and be organizing principles, I think that can be very powerful for institutions which have, you know, turnover, people coming in and out, different leadership, but that if these can sort of stay as principles, then they can be very powerful organizing principles organizationally.
You know, you as a foundation have been running for the last few months a prize process where you have sought to select an organization operating on a national level and an organization operating on a local level that, I don't know, in some ways best or embodies the approach that you're advocating for. And you've gotten, I believe, over 200 semifinalists, which is incredibly impressive. That I would imagine in some way you're saying that these 200 plus projects in some way embody an effort to do the kind of thing that you're advocating. And I'm wondering if through that process, if you could give us, not necessarily, you probably don't want to identify particular organizations, but some sense of what does success look like on the ground when a person or an organization is using the sensibilities as a way of really doing something that you think is going to work?
Among those semifinalists, we have people who are applying Jewish wisdom to help people in very practical ways with everything from parenting to investing, to voting. We have people who are applying Jewish wisdom to help people age in a graceful way, help people deal with the traumas and excitement of adolescent development, people who are applying Jewish wisdom to sustain the environment, people who are applying Jewish wisdom to pursue social justice, people who are applying Jewish wisdom in the context of families and communities. This was, I think, the single most exciting thing that we saw in making this prize available and inviting people to tell us how they were using Jewish wisdom. And there are really two elements to it. One is people who are involved in transmitting Jewish wisdom and helping others to apply Jewish wisdom in their lives. There's a lot of that. It's taking place through text teaching. It's taking place through travel programs. It's taking place through immersive kinds of experiences. But what was also, at least for me, enormously gratifying was the number of organizations who explicitly cited the values, the Jewish values or the Jewish sensibilities that are sustaining their organizational life. So it's Jewish wisdom being applied both by individuals and by organizations. And I think this is part of a much larger shift in American Jewish life that certainly you have spoken of often on this podcast. We as a community have moved beyond what I call the era of Jewish continuity, when it was enough to say, look, what we're concerned about is our survival, whether it be our physical survival or our cultural survival. I don't take that for granted. I don't take it lightly. No one who lived through the 20th century could or should. But it's clear, I think, today that the question that people are asking is, how can my Jewishness help me to live a better life and shape a better world? And what we've seen is that people are incredibly creative in finding ways and settings to bring Jewish wisdom in the form of sensibilities and in other forms to bear on their lives. I don't see any reason why this will not continue over the course of the next number of decades. And I think it will lead to a Jewish world that looks very different than the one that I certainly grew up in, and even perhaps the one that we know today, because what it's going to mean is that those people who are living Jewish lives are living Jewish lives in a much fuller, richer, multidimensional way than what we thought living a Jewish life meant when it meant just going to synagogue or supporting a Jewish organization or being a member of a, you know, of a Jewish organization.
This applied Jewish wisdom phrasing, I mean, we've talked a little bit about language with sensibilities. I love applied Jewish wisdom because what comes to mind when I hear, and I don't know if this was intentional or not, but I think of the pairing of pure math and applied math in the academic world. At one point, I thought I was going to be a math major, and then I, of course, made the obvious transition from math to Judaic studies. Everybody goes through that, right?
Of course.
And what saying applied Jewish wisdom implies is that there is, on the other hand, sort of there's Jewish wisdom on its own. And we're aware of that in the Jewish world because we have this idea of Torah Lishma, which is Torah for its own sake. I think it's right to emphasize that and not always instrumentalize Jewish texts, but also see it as a wonderful, valuable thing in and of itself. But when we look at the math world, which my brain was sparked in that direction, I think there's sort of an understanding or maybe a general societal expectation that, okay, so some people out there in academia land are doing the pure math, and I'm glad they are. And, you know, they need to be doing that. And but I'd look at that sheet of paper and have no idea what to do with it, look at the chalkboard, struggle. And then applied math is sort of this bridge where it's like, okay, we've got these theoretical concepts and we're going to take it into the world. I love that this applied Jewish wisdom is doing the same thing, I think, with Judaism, because so often when we look at, you know, expectations of what it means to be a good Jew, it's lighting Shabbat candles, it's eating kosher food, it's going to services, it's, you know, doing Jewish things, which I do those things, I like them. But the magic for me comes in applying that to my own life and to the world. So that's a comment more than a question, but I really do appreciate that language. And so I guess on that note, I just ask, do either of you have any closing thoughts on Jewish sensibilities, applied Jewish wisdom, or any other of the subject matter that we've talked about?
Yeah, I'd love to build on what you just said, in that what if when we see ourselves demonstrating the sensibility of Gerim Hayitam, when we notice ourselves opening our heart to a stranger, we say, oh, I'm doing a Jewish thing. Several people are turning their attention to reframing what is a Jewish thing, what is a Jewish action, and not just the ritual actions, but the really being engaged in the world in a particular kind of way. Not boiling it, you know, sort of watering it down so much so that it becomes, well, every good deed that you do, you know, we know mitzvah does not mean good deed. A mitzvah is a particular commandment or ritual or type of way of acting in the world. So I'll just say that, you know, when we ask about what does the future look like, what does the future of Judaism look like, that's a certain aspiration that could come out of a project like this of, what would that be like if every time someone realizes, like, oh, okay, I'm embracing my own opinion and I'm really embracing your opinion too, and I'm holding the two of them together at the same time. That's Elu ve'Elu. I'm inhabiting my Jewishness. I'm doing a Jewish thing while that's happening. Or I'm embracing the brokenness of the world and, you know, not letting it destroy me, but at the same time, you know, realizing I can have a hand in helping to repair. Okay, that's Jewishness. Or if you'd ask a 13-year-old, what does it mean to be Jewish? And they say, oh, I know what it means to be Jewish. It means Elu ve'Elu. It means that I hold opinions, you know, of my friends at the same time I hold my own, you know, and that idea of a future like that's very inspiring to me. And I hope that what we're doing is one tiny step toward a future Judaism like that.
Well, we all hope for that too. Thank you. And thank you for gathering for us that list of 200 plus podcast guests, because that's 4 years worth of podcasts for us. So we're very grateful to you on numerous levels, but especially we're grateful for being with us here today. It was really, it's great to hear about what you're doing.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's really wonderful to have an opportunity to stop and reflect on all this and to get, you know, different perspectives. So really appreciate that.
Thanks again to Lee Moore and Jonathan Wucher of the Lippmann Kamfer Foundation for Living Torah. The conversation today has definitely been an important one and sparked some really important ideas that I'm sure we'll discuss in the future. So thanks to both of you. And in closing, we want to encourage, as always, those of you who are listening out there to be in touch with us. And there's a few ways for you to do that. First is through our Facebook page, Judaism Unbound. Second is through our website, judaismunbound.com. Another is through our email addresses, dan@nextjewishfuture.org and lex@nextjewishfuture.org. And last but not least, we want to encourage you, of course, to support us on Patreon. It's a way for you to give a monthly donation in support of the work that we do with the Judaism Unbound podcast. And you can do that on our website at judaismunbound.com/donate. So thanks so much for listening. And with that, this has been Judaism Unbound.